Bucks and a half now a year, I guess. But it's a good magazine, a good book.
Testing, testing, testing.
Do you have that box of photographs? That you...
April 1st, 1979, no, talking to Stanley Dale in Manly Hot Springs.
Oh, you know, we could, or anything from when you were younger.
I don't think we mentioned, did we, Shetland Snow, or
no,
well, didn't. What I was gonna mention when we were kids is that in the winter time we'd make our spending money going shoveling sidewalks, you know, for different people, and go uptown around the business. People all had to keep their sidewalks clean, you know, and we'd make our show money and stuff like that, you know. If we made 50, 70, well, 50 cents or 75, that was real good, you know, if we made that in a day, you know.
How far would you have to shovel?
We'd have to shovel a lot of it, I'll tell you. yeah.
You said that you'd really wish that it would snow?
Well, yeah, that we'd all wishing for snow so we could make some spending money, because that's about one of the... easiest way to pick it up. It wasn't easy, but the only way you could make anything in the winter, you know.
Well, you were talking too about like going to the movie and how much it costs to go to the movie and for candy, like that stuff kids nowadays could relate to, you know, hearing about that.
Well, we'd 10 cents is what we'd for a movie for a kid, and you'd get, like I said, they'd serve you'd get a big bag of popcorn for a nickel, and most they also had hot dogs too, and you could get a hot dog for a nickel, a good big hot dog,
and the candy bars
and candy bars, you know, too. But if I remember right, like Old Henry and Baby Root was a real popular bar, you know. They were popular bars in Old Henry. Well, there was Hershey bars and different bars, but they were kind of a most popular, and of course the peanuts, you know, they was around.
Well, see, what else you were mentioning, about having the ski hills, the ski run hills you'd fix up and toboggan.
Yeah, well, we'd make our own ski slides and that, you know, all get together, a bunch of, well, kids would help, but older people that, you know, knew how to do it, you know, and we'd make some pretty good slides, you know. They're pretty high too, you know, steep, you know.
What would they do to make the slides?
We just use poles and stuff, you know, lumber, pick up scrap lumber and everything, and make a scaffold, you know, and
slide.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, we had some pretty good ones too. What I mean, we'd build them on a hill too, you know, and we'd, you know, well, we were all pretty good, you know, at it, skiing, you know, and then lots of experts too.
Well, you know, this thing about money and how things have changed, like the value of things and kids' attitude towards money. I think that's kind of important stuff, too, that maybe kids don't think about.
Yeah, well, like I told you then, money was hard to come by, you know, for a kid. We had to work for it and rustle around, you know. A kid never had much money. If you had 50 cents or a dollar, you know, you had, when I was growing up, you know, 10, 12 years old or younger than that, that was a lot of money, you know. Yeah. And then we'd pick up, like I said, mentioned too, you know, there was a lot of muskrats and that around there. We trapped them, you know, and they were pretty good priced in, you know, at that time in the 20s, you know, late 20s. Fur was pretty good. You'd get a couple dollars for a rat, you know, and you'd do pretty good, you know.
Well, you were talking about going into the, after they'd cut wood, you know, and you'd go in and...
Oh, yeah. You know, after they logged, there's all logging works, you know. Of course, the second road come up, then we'd go in there and we'd cut cordwood, you know. And then, like I said, too, a lot of the farmers, the ranchers, you know, they all had big, a lot of them had pretty good timber on their land, you know. You'd go cut for them, too, you know. And that was another thing in the winter the farmers would do. They'd log on their own land, you know, and then they'd haul it to the sawmills, and the sawmills would, they'd either buy it or they'd cut it on shares. They'd give the farmer half. And they always needed lumber, and that's the way a lot of them worked it. They take lumber back home.
Well, what about, you mentioned when you went to Montana, too, when you were 17?
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe you could talk about that again. I'm asking you to repeat all these stories.
Well, I traveled around there, and like I said, I worked on a sheep ranch there, making hay is what we done. This guy had a lot of sheep, but they were out in the hills, and we were putting up the hay for the winter, you know. And then after I left there, I went down on the coast, and I went to Mount Vernon, Washington. And that was a pretty, there was lots of farming around there, and there was a lot of work. You could always pick up a job around there, working for those farmers, you know, picking spuds or something. And there was a big cannery there in the town, and they'd have all these farmers contracted out to raise beans and strawberries and all that stuff. Then in the fall, they had to hire a lot of pickers, you know, and you could go and pick, you know, anybody could go and pick, you know, beans or strawberries or whatever they, if you was a good worker, you could make from $2 to $3.50 a day, you know.
How many hours?
Well, we'd work about 8 hours. I remember I got one place we went for this cannery picking beans, and I was making about $2.50 a day, and while the older guys, there was a lot of older people working there. Of course, they didn't make that much. But then there was a lot of women in that was fast. You know, they'd make it $3, $3.50 a day. You know, and that was good. That was real good money then.
You were talking about making that kind of money, and how there are some things that you'd have to work a couple days to get, like buying a pair of shoes.
Oh, yeah, good shoes and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how that's different from today.
Yeah, oh, way different. Well, at that time, you could get a good pair of jeans, you know, Frisco jeans or Levi's or something, for about $1.50. And then a lot of them were cheaper than that. I can remember buying jeans and for as cheap as 85 cents, you know, overalls, you know. Yeah, stuff like that. When we worked around Mount Vernon, there were a lot of people had rooms, you know, and you could get a good room, you know, good clean room, small that bed and that for 35 cents, you know, a night. That's all.
What would meals be like if you went someplace for a meal? To get a meal, how much would
Well,
that
a meal, you could get good meals for all the way. You could, like, bake, say, eggs and hotcakes, about 25 cents, you know, that was. And I was in Spokane one year in Fight Fire, you know. They used to hire a lot of men out there, and you could get 4 hotcakes and coffee, and they give you a cube of butter and 2 eggs for a dime. And you could get a great big bowl of stew for 15 cents. You could, and that'd be all you could eat, you know. And if you had, like, steak or stuff like that, that was higher, you know. That run 35, 40 cents, if I remember right. It wasn't bad, anyway, the price.
And they'd hire cooks. How would cooks get paid?
Well, I don't, you mean in these restaurants? Well, I don't imagine they got too much. Because everything was cheap, you know. And probably they got a couple of dollars a day. That was two and a half. And they worked long hours, you know, how cooks.
Well, since we're talking about food, maybe we could talk about, say when you and your brother would get your supplies for winter, you know, how much money you'd spend for food and what you'd get.
Well, when we were out there in Washington, you could, two guys during the Depression, during the 30s, 30, 31, 32, 33, and through there, we raised a lot of our stuff, too, but $10 a month was about all you needed just for coffee and stuff like that, you know. You know, coffee and sugar and flour and stuff like that. That, and you could, with your garden in $10, you could live real good.
That's a couple of guys?
Yeah. There was eggs, 8 cents a dozen, and bacon was the same way. You know, you could get bacon for about 8 cents a pound, and flour was a cent a pound, and beans is same thing, you know, if you was buying them, and rice was cheap, and macaroni, and sugar was the same thing. You could get about a cent a pound, you know, maybe 2 cents, I don't remember, but it wasn't much. Milk was cheap, and all that butter.
It must be hard sometimes nowadays to look at prices and go.
Yeah, it is. Well, when you look at the prices now and compare to them days, like beans now, 60 cents a pound. And if a farmer, I know a lot of farmers that raised them and had, you know, trashed them and that, if they got a cent a pound, they were lucky at that time.
How much would you buy beans for?
You'd get them back. The markup was damn little, you know, when you bought them at the store. And them big, I can remember them big cans of fruit, you know, them number three or cans, you know, pineapple and all that stuff, you know. About 10 cents a can is all, you know. I can remember that well. But in Washington there, there's a lot of fruit, you know, all over. Every rancher, the stump ranchers had an orchard. And a lot of it was growing along the roads, you know, like cherries and plums and pears. And then there'd be a lot of them places where these guys got disgusted and left, you know, and they planted and the orchards would be there. You could just go help yourself, you know.
You know, I was thinking about, this is kind of changing the subject, but when you were younger, you know, when you were growing up, what kind of holiday celebrations you remember? Like, what were big holidays?
Oh, well, 4th of July was a big, 4th of July was big, and, of course, Christmas and New Year's and Thanksgiving and days like that were all, you know, all pretty big days.
Like
that's my
song.
Dependent, okay.
Well, let's say for 4th of July, what kind of things would you do?
Well, like 4th of July, you know, they'd always, any town and any size, you know, where they have a fairgrounds, they'd have all kinds of shows, horse races and stuff like that, you know, and plenty each, you know, they'd be selling pop and lemonade and anything you wanted, you know, and then, well, another thing, 4th of July, these old airplanes that come in, they'd be doing stunts, you know, and stuff like that, you know, and taking people for rides and these old bi-wings, you know.
Did you ever go on plane rides then?
No, I never did. Never did. I never had a plane ride till I come up here.
Well, what about Christmas? What would that be like?
Well, you know, that was, I can remember, like in the towns there back in Wisconsin there, they'd, the town would give candy to the kids, you know, they'd have a big Christmas tree and Santa Claus, all the kids, they'd be, give you a big package of candy, and then you had your own Christmas, celebrated home, you know, and you had, I think we had a couple of weeks off from school then during Christmas, you know, till after New Year's. And then you vacation, and then whatever you wanted, you know.
Did life seem to change for you very much during holidays, or did you do?
Oh, it was about the same routine, you know. It's just something you maybe had, you know, more goodies to eat and stuff like that.
Well, what kind of things would make you feel really different that happened to you when you were a kid that you felt like was a change from routine and you get real excited about?
Well, you know, you always, you knew when the holidays is coming up, and of course you was looking for it, you know, all the time, and because you knew there would be a big celebration and stuff like that. And then they'd have parties for the kids at the schools too, you know. And
have you ever seen any of those people, like in the last, I don't know, 20 years that you knew when you were growing up?
No. I never, when kids I went to school with, you mean, well, when I got out of the Army, I was gone from my hometown for, I was gone around 15 years. Then when I went back to visit my mother, and I ran onto a lot of kids I used to go to school. They've been in the Army too, you know, a lot of them, and but after I left, then I come back up north. I never run into any of them.
How would you describe your mother to somebody who didn't know her?
Well, my mother was a housewife all the time, you know, and she just, well, the old timers in days, you know, they stayed home and done their housework. And there's another thing. My mother she never got out of the state of Wisconsin until she was about way in her 70s someplace when my niece took her to Minnesota. They never went no place. And she went down, my sister lived in Milwaukee, and she went down and visit her, and that they never traveled around much, most of them people.
And your dad was the same way?
He's just, well, he got around more, you know, when before he was married, you know, he used to work in the woods in Michigan, in the mines in Minnesota, and moved around more, you know. Well, it was easier for a man then, you know, than a woman. They didn't.
Yeah, I guess it was
kind of
hard for women to.
Yeah, well, they didn't. A woman in them days didn't move around like a man, you know. They, like my mother was raised out there in a boondocks, you might say, on this ranch way out, you know, and. Didn't hardly have any education, you know, schools or nothing, you know, and they had on these farms, you know, they had to get out and work, you know, and try to, it's hard making a living on a lot of them farms in days, you know.
Well, do you think, kids would be better off nowadays if they had worked real hard too?
Well, it wouldn't hurt them. It never hurt us guys when we had to work. I think they'd be probably, it wouldn't be all the mischief a lot of them are. I don't say all of them, but you know, there's a lot of good kids today, you know. But you know what I mean? You have to make your entertainment them days. Now they give it to the kids. They don't.
Maybe you enjoyed it more anyway when you made your own entertainment.
Yeah, you can always find something to do, you know.
Is there any other kind of things that about the, you know, that time period that you'd wanna mention? Yeah, if something comes up any time that we're talking, you can switch back to that time, too.
Well, like... it's pretty hard. You just have to answer that.
Okay. How did I just stop?
He had all his windows barred up, you know, he had them nailed up. Somebody was always going to get him, you know. He figured somebody was after him, and he had a couple of 30-30 rifles loaded and a big 45 under his pillow and a 10-gauge double-barrel shotgun.
Did anybody ever get him?
No, he just lived by himself too long, you know, one of them guys just imagining things.
Did you ever worry about that when you're staying out by yourself? Think about old timers and think, oh, maybe it's time to be around other people?
No, it never bothered me when I was lived by my... You know, I was telling you, I showed you this picture here on this old Eddie Brown here.
That first picture?
Where is that? It's not too far back here, this guy. That I found dead in that cabin, right there. This guy here. Mm-hmm. He lived about 6.5 miles from Livengood, and he wasn't into Livengood for 5 years. One time he stayed there, but guys would take his grub out and see him, you know, and that. But he wasn't in town for 5 years. And you'd come, he'd be out there most by himself, like in the summer. It was swampy; nobody went out there much. And he'd be out there for months at a time, and you'd come over to his cabin, you know, walk in on him and that. And he'd be just as calm and talk to you just like somebody who just left there an hour or so ago, you know. And where most of these old guys that's out, you know, and you run on to them, you come in their camp, and well, they'll talk an arm off of you, you know.
What was this guy's name again?
Eddie Brown. He was quite a character. Well, the West Fork and the North Fork come together, and there was a lot of beaver on the creeks them days, and there used to form a big jam there. And he had a 50-gallon drum stove, and then he had a small stove, a cook stove. And all these beaver cuttings would keep jamming there, and he was telling me he had all this beaver wood picked up, you know, these cuttings. He said, "I got the beaver cutting my wood for me," he said.
You know what? I was wondering if we could talk about this photograph number 2. I'll use the numbers that I'm writing down, where that is and who the people
well,
are.
Of course, that's me, and then that's...
You on the right?
With yeah, and then it's Tom Donahue and... my brother Frank. In that cabin is out of Rampart on Hunter Creek. That's 7 miles from 6 or 7 miles from Rampart. And that's the first summer I was here when we mined there, and we didn't do very good. I told you, when we got done that fall, we had $85 or $80, something like that.
So that was 1933.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Whose cabin was that?
Well, a guy built that in the early days. His name was Fritz, and he mined there, and then he moved to Fairbanks, and he started a bakery. He was an old German feller. He had a bakery and a restaurant. And you'd go there and he'd give you a sandwich that big for 25 cents and a cup of coffee. This guy, he made all his own bread and donuts and...
I'm curious, who's that?
That's my brother Frank. That's taken in a cabin there on a West Fork.
Huh.
That's a night, and of course you can see a night picture. Walter Chereau took that picture, the guy from Live and Good.
I noticed there's a lot of him.
That's a photograph that Kurt just brought over.
Okay. Oh, and...
Well, this was a cabin here. It used to belong to the Marshal. Mm-hmm. When they had Andy the Marshal as his mm-hmm. cabin. It was a workshop in the... Frank Haynes, he turned it into a house. You know, he lived in there. And then we bought it off of him. Mm-hmm.
That's photograph number three. Now, photograph four.
Now, that's... That's the cabin at the Hootenanna Hot Springs. Eric Bergman was trapping there then. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's me and my brother. And I took the picture. That's my brother and Jim Ryder and Tom McKinnon. And we had our dogs. That's when we were hauling the drill up to the Hootenanna. We was freighting stuff mm-hmm. up that spring.
What year was that?
That was... Let's see, I think it was 1939. Yeah, 1939 was around in March, later, it was sometime in March.
So this wasn't your first dog team, was it?
No, I had lots of dogs before that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is this one of the sleds you made?
No, not what, I made sleds like that, but I bought that sled, that was my mm-hmm. sled. I bought that off in old Willie Folger. Mm-hmm. $25 for that sled at that time. Yeah. That's what they were selling around the country for.
Looks like a big sled, too.
Mm-hmm. That's 12 feet long. Mm-hmm. So that's me and my brother, Frank. That's taken on Caribou Creek, the Hootenanna, head of the Hootenanna.
Uh-huh. And which one is you?
This one.
On the left.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, you and your brother did a lot together, huh?
Yeah, we trapped together in mine, and we was together printed all the time. We'd go work different places, though, like in the summer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this one, number six. This is the one you said was a school?
It was a school, yeah, at one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is 1939?
No, this is taken about 1935 or 36.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So that's not the right date there, huh?
I gotta get my cheaters on here and left them something. Then I can if I hold it far enough away.
This is right here.
Yeah, 1937. I guess that's what it was.
Yeah, and that with you is Charlie Moses.
Archie Moses from Stevens Village.
Uh huh.
He was raised there, but he lived down here in Cross Jacket and around here for a while. But that's where he's.
Mm-hmm. Were you doing work with him or something?
No, he was just over there visiting me, so.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. Of course, Mrs. Windish and my brother and Joanne Westerland then.
Mm-hmm.
There's Dixie, and she's working on a pipeline.
Oh, this one here.
Now, that was my brother, Frank, of course, and Lank Parr and me.
That's number seven. Okay, so that's you on the left. And who's in the middle?
Lank Parr. Uh-huh. Right, that's his...
Lank Parr.
Parr.
and Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going on in this picture?
Well, we just come in with that fur and just took a picture, you know. It's all.
Gee, how much did you get? And that's after Christmas?
Yeah, we caught that after Christmas. We shipped, mm-hmm. sold about that much before Christmas. There was a lot of fur. Mm-hmm. Well, we had to work hard to get it too, you know.
Mm-hmm. What kind of prices would you get?
Well, the prices wasn't too bad. You could get $50 for a good link, but the wools wasn't worth nothing. You couldn't get over $7-$8 for one of them wools. Mm-hmm. And the foxes, about the best you could do on foxes, probably those crosses, be about $35-$40 and mostly $25. Maybe a $25-$30 average. You's pretty lucky. Mm-hmm. And the mink wasn't very high. There's about $7-$8 a piece, if I remember right. You might get 12, 14 for a real good big one. But average, you know. Mm-hmm. Red fox had only averaged about, maybe $8-$10. And
mm-hmm. That would still be pretty good money for you, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, that was first good compared to at that time, you know. Mm-hmm. Tim Willard and his blue foxes here. A bunch he had pelted in his.
You said this Tim Willard had the fox farm here?
Yes.
Yeah. How long was that here?
Well, there was a fox farm there before he raised a guy by the name of Morrison had it. And he was raising silver foxes. And then he went out of business. And then Tim Willard, he come in there 1925, and he bought blue foxes in there. Mm-hmm. And he raised foxes. He quit about just about the time the war, Second World War, broke out.
Did he have to have a real big area for those?
Well, he had them in pens. He had pens, you know, you pin them up.
Seems kind of different having fox farms when there's other foxes running out.
See, those blues, they come up, he bought them, Paris started from the, come up from the Lucian Islands. You know, the government, some big fur outfit had all those islands leased down there, and they turned them foxes loose, and they fed themselves, you know, lived off mm-hmm. around the bays, and then they, when the fur was prime, they'd take trappers in there from Dutch Harbor in there, and they'd leave them off. They had cabins built, and they'd trap them. But he raised them here in the interior.
About what year would this picture be taken?
That I think that was taken in, pretty sure, in, that was taken just before he quit, about 40, I believe. 40 or 41. I don't for sure remember just what.
Do you have himself a two-dog team?
Yeah, that's all he had. He just used them for, he'd go along these trails snaring rabbits to feed his foxes. He didn't need no dog team, you know, just had to pull him and his rabbits.
Were there a lot of rabbits those days?
Oh, when the cycle would be in, there was lots of them, you know, a lot of rabbits.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's Eddie and Bert Berry.
Yeah, this was the photograph number one. Oh, this is that
airplane that ran away, yeah.
Okay, number nine, airplane with a bent prop. Yeah. Oh, that's the one that took off right in front of
him. Mm-hmm. There.
John
Doe. There's them natives from Cross Jacket. Uh-huh. The Alberts and Folgers. And
that's photograph number nine, boats. you said there used to be quite a few people living over at Cross Jack.
Yeah, there's quite a few around there then. Mm-hmm.
What happened that changed?
Well, when the war come on, they all moved and went to work, you know, different places, and they never... They come back for a while after the war, but then they seem like they all moved out of there again. That's my trapping cabin there in the West Fork.
Photograph number 9 with two beaver skins stretched out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Was this that same place you said the springs were at?
Yeah, that was it's a cold springs. It was no hot springs, you know. It stayed open all winter.
Mm-hmm. And that's when you could shoot beaver, huh?
Yeah, that's when you could hunt them.
Yeah. What year was that?
I think that was about 38, 39, one of them years. I forget just what year.
Mm-hmm. How much would you get for beaver?
Well, at that time, $10 for a blanket. See, those are blanket beaver. You get $10. That's about all you could get.
Here you are again.
That was Lank and, let's see, I think that's Lank, them two brothers. Yeah, Lank and Bob Parr and my brother Frank. These two,
Frank on the left.
Yeah, these two fellows are brothers.
Uh-huh. Lank and what's the other one's name?
Bob. This guy's dead. This guy's still alive. He's in Warm Springs, Oregon. We write all the time.
Yeah. Well, it looks like there's some wood sawing going on.
Oh, yeah. We built a big cabin there. We prospected that creek for, we was on it 2-3 years on and off. We took a drill in there. And,
which creek is this?
Caribou Creek on the Hootenanna. Uh-huh. Runs into the Hootenanna about 40 miles from here.
Uh-huh. How is prospecting?
Well, we didn't find nothing. We give it up.
You have a good time?
Oh, yeah. These guys trapped her in the winter, these two fellas.
Uh-huh. And so you'd go someplace else to trap in the winter?
Yeah, that's when I was trapping on the West Fork at the Tolavana, uh-huh, around the Sawtooth and down to Livingood.
Uh-huh. Was it that cabin at Tolavana where you said you found that, a wolf that was curled up?
Well, yeah, that was on Lost Creek, it was a tributary of the Tolavana, mm-hmm, West Fork. Mm-hmm. That's a Porcupine Creek there, and I was working for Tori Anderson.
This is number 11. And you're holding up a...
Well, that's a grizzly bear shot there. Mm-hmm.
And that story, what was the story on that, getting that grizzly? Is that grizzly coming around a lot?
No, that bear there, I was hunting caribou. I was trying to get some meat, and there was no caribou around. And it was getting dark. I was just coming over this, there was a divide right back there. I was walking over there, it was all open, and this bear was coming up the other side. And... he was coming right towards me. Of course, he didn't know I was there, and I lay down, and he come right up to me, you know, and so I nailed him.
Mm-hmm.
Manly. That's when we was hunting beaver. Mm-hmm. Some beaver I killed.
How many beaver?
I had 6 there that time. He was only allowed 10, but I walked up the creek and I skinned some out, and then the last ones I shot there.
Uh-huh.
Me and my brother were hunting there. Didn't
mm-hmm. You didn't have any trouble with them going back down, huh?
Well, you gotta kill them, you know. You gotta wait till you get them in a good place, and then get them in a heady. And if you kill them dead, they float. If you just wing them, they get down. You lose them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Hootenanna Hot Springs where the water mm-hmm. comes out. And that's one of my dog teams there. Me and my brother's team, Adam, together, is going someplace.
Uh-huh. Is that you there?
Yeah, that's me.
That's number 12. How many dogs you got?
I don't know. There's 8 or 10. I don't know what that you can remember. Just one. I think there's...
Yeah. Pretty good-sized dogs.
Yeah, they were... Well, that's... Bob Thompson, Dixie's half-brother. When they had the jail here, they had a jail back here when they had a marshal, and he's looking through the bars.
Where was this jail at?
Right back here.
Oh. Is that one in here?
I don't know, that's my brother and some gal is coming through here. That's one of my trapping cabins. We never built it. A guy by the name of Bob Densmore built it. He died here a few years ago. He was a real old timer. He's in Eureka mine. And
it's number 13. What's this you got on there? Your firewood?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that sled looks big. Did you used to really stack up firewood a lot like you do now?
Oh, yeah, we'd always have wood, you know. Then in the winter when you was around your camp, you had time, you know, nothing that you'd always go out and cut some more, always keep it ahead, you know. Mm-hmm. That was a dog team of mine that's taken right below the sawtooth. I traveled, let's see, 75 miles that day. I come in here.
75 miles that
75,
one day?
Yeah. Gee. Half of that was bare ground, too, at the run.
Why are you traveling so far?
Well, it was breaking up in the spring, and I wanted to get in here with my dogs. The creeks are starting to open up and everything, and I had to get out of there. That's when I was trapping one year on a Hootenanna. That was taken about 1950 as a cabin. I stayed in some prospectors built it. And see where I got the snow banked up there? Mm-hmm. Well, that summer, a big bear come up to that cabin, and he knocked the whole side off. And that one side, he just swapped it out. I don't know. And I hung up, put my nail in my sled tarp there, and then I banked it up with snow. I stayed in there for... couple of 2-3 weeks.
Huh. Boy, bear, was that bear after something in there?
Well, evidently he must smelled something there. There's a lot of big bear. There was a lot of big bear around there. Brown bear.
Number 15.
That's the drill, this Lang Par, when we were drilling on a Hootenanna.
This is a drill that you guys owned?
Yeah, we own that drill.
Well, what would you do, like, when that didn't work out for you and you quit?
Well, we're testing the ground. We couldn't find no gold. Well, we just pulled out of it. We stayed there a couple of years on and off. Mm-hmm. We put down a whole bunch of holes.
Did you go someplace else after that?
Yeah, we moved here to Eureka and...
Mm-hmm. What's this one?
Well, that's a picture in Washington where I lived, and that's my brother, oldest brother.
What's his name?
John. Mm-hmm. That's my sister-in-law. And then that was some neighbors. He was some furry caught up in the hills. He was trapping Martin.
Oh, who was trapping it?
My brother.
Oh, uh-huh. That's number 17. So this is that place you had stayed
at? Yeah, you can see the right back in here where I lived. I had a cabin, right? Uh-huh, you can see a little bit of it, yeah.
Uh-huh.
That was when I was coming out. I was bringing the dogs out from Caribou Creek when we were prospecting there. There was no snow, and I had to bring them out there on bare ground. I had to bring them here.
Yeah. That's number 18. Boy, how'd they do on that trip?
All right. It was 40 miles in here. I left about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I was here between 8 to 9 that night. And it's all, the dogs is good. I had to, of course, I could run good. I couldn't ride, you know. I had to run long with them.
So what year was that?
That was, I believe that was 40. 1940.
Mm-hmm. Was that early spring?
Yeah, that was in the spring. There wasn't much snow. There was no snow at all that winter around here. There was just about that much snow.
Okay. Must have made it tough all winter for...
It was. It was hard all winter for guys. Everybody's using dogs then, you know, through the tundra. That's me when I was defending the homeland here in the army.
That's you on the left, huh?
Yeah. There's a guy in the same outfit.